Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. Spooky Season Part 2, the New Mexico edition. Yes, I know we have been in New Mexico and Colorado a bunch recently, and it's like, Rachel, we get it, you moved to a new place and are fascinated by it. That is 1000% true, but I hate to break it to you. If we're gonna go spooky, there's no better place than the American Southwest. Similar to if you expected a ghost to be in Salem, Massachusetts, or the Gettysburg Battlefield, or the Lizzie Borden House, a place with this much history is bound to have some spirits living among us. But more than spirits, this part of the country is rich with stories of UFO sightings, skinwalkers, black-eyed children, and more. And whether you believe in this type of stuff or not, I hope that for your spooky season pleasure, this will at least give you a fresh and different type of entertainment. Again, even if you don't believe this stuff, there's no way it doesn't at least make you think a little bit. Here's the deal. I don't necessarily know if I believe in this stuff, but I've encountered enough stories, lived in enough places, Oregon, where I'm from, being the Bigfoot capital of the world, known enough people, my grandpa, who has never said a weird thing in his entire life, claims to have had a few UFO alien encounters, lost track of time, and to this day, won't get on an airplane again. There are also stories I dove deep into for this episode, told from the Navajo Rangers, trained law enforcement, tapped to also investigate paranormal experiences on their tribal land, and experiences that are so real for them that one of the Navajo Rangers, John Dover, has said repeatedly that he would testify in a court of law to their truth. He says it's the same as any other crime or tangible evidence in their mind, backed up by 30 years of responding to calls from terrified Navajo residents, investigated with the fine detail of an FBI team. They are about as reputable as it gets. And I gotta say, if I believe any of this, it's the stories that come from these men's mouths. We will hear a bunch from them in a bit. Oh, and wait. The subject of today's episode is a place Greg and I drove on a road trip from California to Colorado and actually experienced some of the lore and danger that it is said to possess. So let's start with Highway 666. Creepy in name, and even creepier in person, the stories of Highway 666 range from sightings of skinwalkers, a ghost girl in a white dress, mysterious ghostly vehicles that appear out of nowhere and try to run you off the road, UFO sightings, glowing orbs, people losing days of time after driving on the highway, and more. And most hauntingly, a record-breaking amount of deaths along Highway 666. So Greg's going to jump on here real quick and help me explain our experience of doom and gloom on Highway 666. It's no joke, and we had no idea why.
Yeah, so as I remember it, we stopped in Gallup, New Mexico at the El Rancho Hotel, which is super cool.
So cool.
Old Western style.
That's where all the old Western stars stayed when they filmed in New Mexico, like John Wayne and Ronald Reagan. And
exactly. And Rachel had been trying to stay at this hotel for a long time, but every time had encountered a weird travel hiccup.
Oh my God, yes. Twice before.
Yeah. Yes. So finally, it was the first time that we had stayed there, and we were just on a high after. Like, we had such a good time. We woke up in the morning, and we were in a great mood. I bought some like random souvenirs at the gift shop, and we hit the road.
You were going to try to buy me earrings and stuff, but I was like, I don't really need anything.
Yeah.
But we were
thrilled. So clearly, I was in a good mood, because yeah. I'm like, cheap.
No, it was after my engagement ring. Then you were like, that's the last thing you're ever getting, because it's gorgeous.
So we're in a good mood, and we just leave the hotel, and we're going to Shiprock, which is a crazy rock formation in the middle of nowhere in northwestern New Mexico. So we pull out of the El Rancho parking lot and very quickly turn on what is now Highway 491. formerly known as Highway 666, and suddenly, seemingly immediately, both of our moods irrationally change, and we're in the worst moods. Nothing really even happened. We were hungry. We decided we're going to stop and get food. That became a whole fiasco, and we get back on the road, frustrated as hell, and we're yelling at each other, and then immediately we turn a bend, and it's like all of civilization ends, but yet there is a clearly fatal wreck with a semi-truck that looks like it just slammed to the side of the rock embankment, and we're just spooked and like kind of in silence, you know.
Well, at least it shut us up.
It shut us up.
But it was, because it was scary. It was kind of like, so you didn't really know much about it. I had kind of known a little bit of lore about Highway 666, but not enough to like really put two and two together of why our moods changed. But then seeing that accident within the first couple miles, pretty much, it felt like, of getting on that highway was like, oh. Because that's always jarring and sad, and you feel horrible for the people. But it was kind of like, oh, God, is the lore real?
And then in very Rachel O'Brien Hunter fashion, she immediately puts on a podcast about the highway.
I was like, well, now we got to know.
Which was, you know, the perfect soundtrack to the trip. However, it was strange because they were talking about all of these cryptid, crazy, ghoul, monster, skinwalker type of creatures that are also inhibit feral dogs' bodies. And we saw a whole pack of them. And it's like, I've seen stray dogs, but these things seem a bit more organized, like a wolf pack or coyotes, but yet they were all kind of just different types of mutts, it seemed, different breeds. They were in the middle of nowhere. We'd been driving for miles. There'd been nothing, not houses, just absolute desolation. And then there's these dogs running along the side of the highway.
I mean, I was distracted by my snacks, so I didn't see the dogs. But Greg all of a sudden was like, Rachel, that there actually is a pack of feral dogs. And I was like, where? And I missed seeing them. But that's just weird. Like, why are there packs of feral dogs in the middle of nowhere? This 200-mile stretch of highway starts in Monticello, Utah, and winds through desolate desert, wilderness, juniper brush, pinyon trees, and just so much nothingness. And it eventually finds its devilish end in Cortez, Colorado. It also goes right through Navajo Nation, sacred land for the Navajo tribe, which spans 27,000 square miles, 17 million acres, the size of West Virginia. The most sacred of monuments for the Navajo tribe in the area is a place called Shiprock, a place Greg and I visited on that road trip. It's a gorgeous geological sight to see, a ship-shaped rock, and the birthplace of the Navajo, who have a legend that the rock was actually a real ship. And during a flood, the Navajo went up onto the ship, saving them, similar to Noah's Ark. This area is a hotbed for things that go bump in the night, odd lights in the sky, cattle mutilations, rocks thrown from out of the blue at unsuspecting people, shape-shifting creatures, large-headed Bigfoot-type creatures, vortexes, and more. So are you guys ready? This is Seven Deadly Sinners, the American Southwest, and Highway 666. The story of Highway 666 starts in the 1920s, 1926 to be exact, when the famous Route 66 was constructed. It was to be America's main drag, connecting Chicago to Los Angeles. And when they branched the highway off the straight path of Route 66, the assigned numbers to each offshoot were assigned a number in order of when they were constructed. So the sixth branch of the new route became Highway 666 in 1929, beginning a long saga of strange happenings. Only eventually being renamed Highway 491 in 2003, renamed because of the curse locals, Navajo people, and roadsters alike felt the highway, sharing a name with the beast depicted in the Book of Revelations, was just bad news. And even though Navajo people didn't fear the named Highway 666 for the same reasons that people off their reservation did, but they believed in spirits, bad omens, and they felt naming a highway cutting through their land 666 was only inviting trouble. And that it did. So imagine driving down this long, desolate highway. I mean, there are no service stations for over 100 miles. I mean, there's just, if you don't know better before taking this trip, you could end up broke down, out of gas, and out of supplies. So if you do drive this road, fill up your gas tank, hydrate, and maybe even listen to some meditation music, because you might be in for the ride of your life. I say this because many reports over decades tell of people feeling anxious all of a sudden while driving down the highway, like something bad is about to happen to them and they don't know why they feel that way. While driving down this road, you can see the horizon in front of you and behind you, so you would know if there was a car anywhere near you. So when a car suddenly appears on your tail, what else could it be besides supernatural? Satan's sedan is one of the terrifying stories of Highway 666. Appearing out of nowhere, a car begins terrorizing travelers. This ghost vehicle appears after sunset. It charges the innocent victims' cars, driving them right off the road. It's been reported to be the ghost of a black 1930s Pierce Arrow Roadster, which has allegedly been the cause of several vehicle crashes and has been linked to at least 5 deaths, most of which occurred on the night of a full moon, which is when the vehicle is said to appear. Some have even said when they looked inside the car as it was attempting to sideswipe them, whatever was driving had glowing red eyes. Another ghost vehicle is described as a semi-truck driven by a crazed man who also tries to drive people off the road. Witness descriptions state their cars have either overheated or they have had a flat tire that forces them to pull over. And then stranded on the side of the road, they claim this fast-moving truck has intentionally aimed for them. And several have had their cars hit by this angry driver. These two black vehicles are also seen when their headlights are spotted in drivers' rearview mirrors. They start to tailgate their intended victims and then hit them repeatedly from behind. And then there are the dogs. These dogs, also known as demon dogs or hellhounds, and are said to be able to match the pace of a speeding car down a desolate highway. So we're talking probably at certain points, 80, 90 miles an hour. And their goal was also apparently to run you off the road. Their eyes are said to be bloodshot, their bodies muscular and lean. They have been said to slash tires with their razor-sharp claws and even lunge through vehicles' doors at their drivers. Sometimes terrified or on accident, motorists have run over the dogs. But when they look in their rear view mirror, the dogs eerily stand right back up in the moonlight of the driver's rear view mirror. I mean, number one, I hate that a dog was run over, but these dogs seem like assholes. And number two, how eerie would that be to look back and slowly see the demon dog rise after you hit it at 80 miles per hour? They are even so brave, brave enough to face biker gangs. Well, that makes two of us, but we all know from my motorcycle club episode, I quickly backed down like a wuss once they talked back to me or told me to fuck off, you know. But according to the book, Real Ghosts, Restless Spirits, and Haunted Places, Dr. Avery Teacher of Phoenix documented several of the stories from Devil's Highway, And one of those accounts is of a pack of hellhounds which attacked a group of motorcycle gang members. Two of the bikers had been mauled by the dogs and lost arms. A third biker was attacked and bit on the face by the hounds from hell. And now enter the Navajo Rangers, and one of the craziest stories I have ever heard. The Navajo Rangers are responsible for many different areas of enforcement and protection. Some of these areas of responsibility include, but are not limited to, cultural resources, forestry, parks, and scenic areas, fish and game, backcountry patrol, all-terrain vehicle patrol, search and rescue, technical rescue, boat operations, mud, flood, snow emergencies, and wild land fire investigation and response. But in addition to these seemingly normal day-to-day tasks, the Rangers have also been involved in a surprisingly large number of paranormal investigations. And although these paranormal cases account for less than 1% of cases, retired Ranger John Dover still considers them to be a significant part of their job. All of their officers are trained at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center and are recognized by the federal government as federal officers. And even with their extensive training, nothing prepared them for some of the strange paranormal cases that they investigate. Dover, along with his partner Stan Milford, have come across reports of several different instances of paranormal activity and sightings such as ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, and even creatures in the Navajo folklore like skinwalkers, witches that can shapeshift into animals. Navajo Rangers John Dover and Stan Milford experienced many of these things firsthand when being called to the scene of paranormal or cryptid incidents on the reservation. These two men give talks around the country now, telling their stories and showing real evidence of these events. Events that seem otherworldly and made up. But really think about it. Would these guys really run a 30-plus year scam or con on everyone around them, telling them fake tale after fake tale? I don't think so. Additionally, both men are Navajo-trained law enforcement officers, eventually turned Navajo Rangers, and also Navajo themselves. You see, most people don't want to do what they do. They are either too scared, don't believe it, laugh at it, or, I think, too scared. Especially when it comes to the stories of the skinwalkers. A phenomenon so terrifying to the Navajo people, and well, if you're not scared after hearing this story, you might be a skinwalker yourself, because I don't see how anyone wouldn't be extremely unnerved. But the skinwalkers are so terrifying that when John and Stan were giving a talk at the convention, they gave this disclaimer before going into the skinwalker stories.
We're going to talk a little bit about skinwalkers here.
Before we get into this one, I would like to say that I know we have some natives here joining us, and we appreciate that. But I do want to give, I guess, a warning in that that we are presenting this, and anybody that would be sensitive to it, I would suggest you step out till we get done talking about this. A lot of the perception is the Hollywood version that these are like werewolves, you know?
Yeah. And as we get into this, we're going to find out that the reality is a lot more frightening than the Hollywood versions. The skinwalker is actually a shapeshifter. We don't know how they do it, but they can turn themselves into animals, various different types of animals, crows, owls, and within Native American culture, all around the United States and Canada, they have different versions of the same thing. This is the Hollywood version, of course, the Wolfman. What we see a lot is animals. They've been described as greyhound types, very thin, muscular. They can keep up with the vehicle.
Those are tidbits, but this next story is out of this world terrifying to me. Here is John Dover's firsthand account of a series of unfortunate events that occurred when he answered the call from Mr. and Mrs. Begay to come to their ranch near Window Rock, Arizona, essentially the capital of Navajo Nation. But their trauma would be the least of the casualties from this insane story. Here it goes. So skinwalkers seem to be the best explanation for this series of events. However, this couple could be so unlucky that they also had a Bigfoot on their property. But I'll let you be the judge at the end. I've read this story probably 5 times now, and it wasn't until the 3rd or 4th time that I clued into what might have happened. We'll compare notes after. Here's how John Dover described skinwalkers. John says the misconceptions about skinwalkers are endless. There's a Hollywood version of what is depicted on TV and movies, but is not an accurate depiction. He says that he has even taken issue with TV shows he appeared on himself, where they show photos of Kuchinas, Navajo medicine men, or dancers wearing Yabache outfits. John states that these are depictions of various gods that the people have, and to call them skinwalkers, a very different and very evil being, is extremely disrespectful. He says that just because they look weird doesn't mean they are an evil satanic being. Those pictures and people are a part of their culture. He says a skinwalker is somebody who has gained the knowledge of shape-shifting or shape-changing through ceremonies and chants and through the terrible rituals of human sacrifice. He goes on to say that skinwalkers are real people. They are not an avatar, and they can be killed. And that the reality of them is a lot more frightening than you can imagine. They are shapeshifters, and they don't know exactly how they do it, but they have the ability to turn themselves into various types of animals, including coyotes, crows, owls. And in Native American culture, all of the tribes have versions of the same thing. Skinwalkers, or shapeshifters, are able to take on the DNA of the animal in which they are wearing the skin of. If they decide to be a coyote, they will carry the skin of the coyote in their backpack, which says to me, yeah, this is just a human being walking around who did whatever ceremony or sacrifice. Some people say that they are required to kill and eat the most loved member of their family to be initiated into the life of a skinwalker, but there are other ways of becoming a skinwalker. 2 ways. You are either contacted by a shapeshifter or a group of shapeshifters, and your choice is either to die or pick someone in your family you care very dearly about to be sacrificed. And the other way is to come upon one of their secret meetings on accident and see them, and then they capture you, and the same scenario plays out. You saw us, now you are either one of us or you have to die. He said what he's seen a lot in his career and life as a Navajo man are animals that are described like greyhound dogs with muscular builds who have supernatural abilities. Remember those feral dogs we talked about on Highway 666? John's son even had an encounter. While driving down the highway at over 60 miles an hour, his son had one of these creatures run next to him, again, 60 miles per hour, and kept pace with him. It wasn't until his son gunned it to over 100 miles per hour that he was able to shake the creature.
My own son had one chasing him one time in his vehicle, and he was going 65 miles an hour, and the thing was keeping up. He was seeing it right in the rearview mirror. He sped up. It sped up. He finally said, "That's it. I'm leaving." And he put it up to 100 miles an hour and finally pulled away. My daughter had seen one, and she said that this thing was painted all in white. It got down on all fours and took off running. So they're real. And in Navajo lore, they are totally evil. They're not there to help anybody. They're only there for themselves.
He also says that he had an uncle that killed one. Well, after doing so, the uncle went to the local bar and bragged about killing the coyote-looking skinwalker who was trying to get into his sheep's pen. Immediately following, his uncle lost touch with reality, had grabbed a knife and started chasing his girls, and then was placed in a home. He died 1 year later. John has story after story about these creatures and many other UFO unexplained encounters himself, with his family, and obviously on his job site, where his job was to help. But the story that encompasses almost all of these things in one, or just a day in the life of a Navajo ranger, is this one. Here is his account of this story. I arrived at the Begay Ranch at 22:30 hours and set up near the first sighting or incident. I remained in my vehicle until 00:30 hours until I did a foot patrol of the area and took a voice recorder with me. The following incident occurred at 00:53 hours when I heard a whooping sound coming from what seemed like in between the barn and the mesa on the west side of the property. When I arrived at the area where I thought the sound had come from, I observed that the animals were awake and acting fearful. There was nothing visual that would lead me to believe that the animal or skinwalker or whatever it was in the area. Because of the mesa, it was hard to tell if the entity was on the property or closer to the mesa, which was about a half a mile away. So then I walked the perimeter of the barn and I returned to my vehicle, and nothing was observed for the rest of the night. That was the first night of the investigation. Night 2. I arrive at the Begay farm at 2:00 hours, because tonight we have a team here. There's myself, another investigator ranger, a paranormal team of investigators of 3, a veterinarian, and the property owners, Mr. and Mrs. Begay. The objective tonight is to perform a necropsy on the farm animal that was found in the early morning hours by Mr. Begay during feeding time. The sheep was found in the same area I was investigating last night, and the whooping sounds were heard again at the west end of the property. The visual examination conducted. The following findings were noted and recorded. Specimen was drained of blood, and no blood was visible in the area. Incisions were surgical precision, and the specimen was dissected completely in half. The wounds looked like they had been cauterized during the process. Eyes, teeth, lung, tongue, stomach, anus, and reproductive organs and heart were all missing. A patch of fur from the back leg was also missing, and there was also a small burn the size of a dime on the hoof. Core temperatures of the specimen were 115 degrees Fahrenheit, which was the strangest of the findings. At the time of examination, the core body temperature should have been well below 90 degrees Fahrenheit. How could it be 115? Everyone stood around for a couple of hours talking about what they had witnessed. It was by far the weirdest thing they had ever seen. Everyone was readying themselves to leave the area when a rock was thrown and struck the ranger's truck. It took him a moment to realize what had happened and what had been thrown. The ranger grabbed his flashlight and headed in the direction where they thought it was thrown from. Paranormal investigators in tow. The remaining group decided to head back to the homestead and wait for the other group to return there. The ranger group was well on their way into the forest that surrounded the ranch. There was a small hill that opened into the valley, and they were just getting to the top of the hill when another rock came flying at them. It didn't hit anyone, but the rock was larger than the last one. Whoever or whatever could throw a rock that big must be quite large. Also, the rock was warm, almost hot to the touch. So curiosity pushed them on. The ranger would later say this was the point they should have turned around and headed back to the homestead. But they didn't. In fact, they decided to split up and search for whatever this was. Meanwhile, the homestead group was just arriving back to the house and noticed the screen door was open and the motion sensor light was on. And there was no reason why the lights should be on. There were no animals in the back, and they had arrived from the front. They quickly got inside, feeling a bit jarred by what had set the light off, when a loud thud hit the front door. Mr. Breguet went to the window and looked out just in time to see a large bipedal wolf-like creature slinking around the corner of the house. He was so shocked and scared, he stood there, fixated on the window, not able to move. His wife had to pull him away from the window and was asking what he saw when another thud hit the back door. The group was now terrified. The veterinary wanted to just leave, but the fear of what was outside just kept her inside the house. Meanwhile, the other group had split up, and one of those groups had been chased in the small valley by a growling red-eyed beast. They ran, screaming the whole way into the small valley where the rest of the group met up with them. The light drizzle of rain that had started when they initially split up was now turning into a full-on downpour. Between the monster chasing them and the rain, they had to make a quick plan to get back to the ranger's truck. When they were trying to figure out how to get back, another rock was thrown, and this time it hit one of the investigators, leaving a small knot on her head. That motivated them to run, going around and away from the way they came from, and this time sticking together. The homestead group were still being assaulted with rocks being thrown at the house, loud bangs on the doors, and growling from the wolf creature. Mr. Breguet had seen the rain was coming down in sheets now, and the wind was howling right along with the wolf that was stalking them. They were huddled together, lights all turned off except one in the hallway. Each bang on the door made them jump, not knowing if it was the wolf or the others they had left back at the sheep pen. They were too scared to get up and look. But about this time, the other group, soaked to the bone and having been chased most of the night, finally made their way back to the ranger's truck and were able to get in and start making their way back to the home. They were almost there when a coyote ran out in the road and stood staring at them, more like glaring at them. It was a big coyote. In fact, it was one of the largest the ranger had ever seen. But what worried them most is that a coyote is one of the animals that a skinwalker can shapeshift into. Not knowing what to do, they drove forward as if to call the thing's bluff, but the coyote just stood there, defiant and glaring. The ranger didn't want to hit it, but he had to. He had enough for this night and was ready to get as far away from this cursed place as possible. They drove on, and when they got to the spot where they should have felt a bump from hitting the coyote, there was nothing, and it had just vanished. They pushed on, grateful to be in the safety of the truck and out of the weather, and now they just needed to make it back to the house. Hopefully, they weren't far away. Mr. Breguet had grown tired of the wolf that was stalking them, and he went to retrieve a shotgun. This was going to end. He shoved a handful of shells in his pocket and grabbed his 12-gauge at the same time the rest of the group pulled up outside and saw the dark house. This worried them, so they got out and started to make their way towards the porch when the investigators saw a flash of fur running at top speed toward them. They were halfway between the porch and the truck, and two of them ran for the porch and started banging on the door to get in the house, and then two made their way back to the truck. The wolf thing chased the two that were running for the truck, and they barely had time to get in and slam the door before it came smashing into the side, making a dent. The ranger and the other investigators were still banging on the door when it swung open, and they were met with a double-barrel shotgun in their face. They both let out a gasp or scream before being pulled inside and the door slammed behind them. The ranger told Mr. Begay that two people were still outside and they had to get them. The ranger and Mr. Begay checked the windows, and with no wolf in sight, they opened the door and started for the truck, head on a swivel, the whole way. They got on the porch and were waving for the others to hurry and come. They're not about to leave the safety of the truck, though. They had just seen the wolf thing making his way around the back of the vehicle, and it was now shaking it from side to side, like the wolf was trying to turn it over. "Come on," the ranger was yelling at them. The truck was now violently shaking. "Let's go, we have to go." The doors opened and they ran for the safety of the house. They made it onto the porch with the wolf right on them when it suddenly bit into the heel of the female investigator. She screamed out in pain and the others tried to grab and for a second played a little game of tug-of-war with the wolf creature who was now standing on its back legs with her foot in his mouth. With a jolt, they all fell through the doors and her shoe came off in the wolf's mouth. But she was safely inside with the others. The ranger kicked the door closed and then there was a loud crash as this thing slammed into the door with a yelp. The investigator's foot was bleeding profusely and she was crying from the terror and pain. They knew that they had to get her to the hospital, but the closest one was an hour away and there was a beast outside stalking them. The best the ranger could do was wrap it and wait it out. It was now past 4:30 in the morning, and it would be light soon. They could hear the thing growling and howling and beating against the house for the next hour, but they had shuttered the windows closed and reinforced the door to keep themselves safe until they could get away. No one knew why this accumulated into an attack on this particular night. And no one understood what these two beasts were, the strange coyote and the wolf creature. As they spoke about it, the Begays knew they didn't want to spend one more night on the land. The sightings had gotten progressively worse, and now they're being attacked. And they were convinced that the land was cursed and nothing can fix it. They talked about a medicine man possibly doing a blessing, but they just wanted out. This was just too much. They were losing their animals, which was their livelihood. They had observed orbs and heard howling screams and had 7 animals killed by these things. There was no way they were going to stay. The ranger told them about the coyote, which was what further drove the idea of moving away. They couldn't sell because reservation land can't be bought, it can only be leased. So they would have to find another place for their animals, but they also had to protect their livestock and themselves. As dawn approached, the growling had ceased, and they no longer heard any animal or whatever it was pacing outside. They opened the shutters one by one, but there was nothing but a gloomy day and rain hitting the windows. They still had the issue of getting the investigator to the hospital. While the others agreed to take her, as she had been sleeping for the last hour and appeared to be having nightmares. But who wouldn't after what she went through? The Begays thanked everyone and apologized profusely for what had transpired. The ranger had to make a report and asked what they wanted to do with that. They told him, "Be honest." The ranger was the first to leave, but only after making sure the Begays were okay. And he did give them some tips to keep them safe. But they assured him they wouldn't be staying one more night there. The ranger even suggested that they had a skinwalker and possibly a Bigfoot on their ranch, and that leaving would probably be for the best. He would go on to write a book about his experience that night, among others he's had in his career as a Navajo ranger. The veterinarian was the next to leave. She was intrigued by the examination she'd done the night before on the animal, and she said she had wished she had had more time to go over the case with the Begays. At this point, though, they weren't even worried about the circumstances that brought them all together. They just wanted out of there. They asked her to keep the files sealed until they moved away, and she agreed. She would move her practice to another state a few months later. The investigators were the last to leave. They tried to let the woman who had been bit sleep as long as possible before they left. The Begays thanked them and made arrangements to have their animals moved that day and to leave themselves. They would never stay another night on the homestead. The investigators took the lady with the bite into the emergency department, and she was treated and released with instructions to return for treatment of rabies. She would go on to complete the treatment before going missing 3 days after her last vaccine. Her friends and team spent months looking for her, but they never saw her again. A year and a half later, she was reported missing. Her car was allegedly found near the old Begay homestead. There were many articles inside: her purse, cell phone, a map, and a package of raw hamburger sat open on the front seat, half of which was gone. But nothing else was out of place. She was just never found. Just another disappearance on the reservation. Whew. So what do you guys think happened? The half-eaten raw hamburger on the front seat leads me to believe she became a skinwalker after being bit, but it seems no one will ever know. But let me know what you guys think over on the Instagram at 7 Deadly Sinners Podcast. And until next week, stay spooky. Love ya. Bye.